Hello, everyone. Before I start the next podcast episode, I just wanted to let you know that Helping Couples Heal will be doing our next online couples workshop on September 27th and 28th. And we will be doing our very first in-person workshop in California on October 18th and October 19th. And that is the first in-person workshop that we are offering since before COVID. So if you're interested in either of those workshops in September or October, please email support@helpingcouplesheal.com, or you can go to the website helpingcouplesheal.com to learn more. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Helping Couples Heal podcast, a place for healing and hope for couples impacted by betrayal resulting from infidelity and or sex addiction. Your host is Marnie Breaker, licensed marriage and family therapist, certified sex addiction therapist, and founder of the Center for Relational Healing in Los Angeles and San Diego, California. The Helping Couples Heal podcast was launched in 2021 with the intention of bringing hope to couples all over the world who are desperately trying to recover from the devastating impact of betrayal. Realizing how many people the podcast was reaching and that we could offer even more support to our listeners, Marnie co-founded Helping Couples Heal, which has since grown into a global online coaching organization. This podcast is the foundation of all the work that we do at Helping Couples Heal. Thank you for listening. Marnie brings over a decade of experience and expertise in the field of betrayal trauma and is honored to support you wherever you may be in your healing. If you've lost hope, you've come to the right place. Now, take a slow, deep breath and let's begin with the Helping Couples Heal podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Helping Couples Heal podcast. This is Marnie, and today I am really grateful and excited about introducing you to two of our Helping Couples Heal betrayal trauma coaches. They happen to be a husband and wife, in addition to being coaches at HCH. And I asked if they would be willing to share their story because I get asked a lot by clients who are longing to heal their relationships. Are there really stories of success? Can people really get through this? And I know that the answer is yes, because that's why I do this work. But I think it's really difficult when people are in the throes of betrayal trauma to believe that it's possible to get to the other side and to have a beautiful future. I'm really grateful to have you both here. So Scott Rankin and Susan Rankin, thank you both for being here.
Thanks, Marnie. I really appreciate you allowing us to be here. Excited to be on board with the company. I think one of the newest coaches at HCH, so that's really exciting. Susan's been there for a couple of years helping people, so I've been observer on the sidelines, watching her do her thing for quite a while, and really excited to jump in and try to help.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm grateful for given this opportunity to really talk about our story today. And this is a vision that we had after reconciliation of really wanting to work with couples. And so now what we had a vision to do 7 years ago is now coming to fruition. So I'm just sitting here going, okay, this is a full circle moment right now.
I'm so honored to be a part of that. And I do remember, Susan, when we first talked, you told me about Scott and you told me about sort of the changes and transitioning that was going to come with his career and his desire to work in this field and the desire for you guys to do couples work. And look where we are now. It just goes to show that when you want something, it doesn't just happen. It takes work. I'm not a believer that you put something out in the world and you manifest it, meaning like it happens the next day, but I believe you can put something out there and then work towards it and you can have a wonderful outcome. So I'm really honored that you're both with HCH. And I really believe that our listeners need hope, and that's what you guys can provide. So I think I'm just going to maybe start with asking you to share a little bit about your story pre-discovery.
Why don't you start about how we met?
Yeah. Okay. Actually, Susan and I met over 28 years ago in the Marines. We were both in the Marine Corps as young kids. We were in the same command, and I went into her office. She was working in administrative stuff, and I was an infantryman working at guarding special weapons and stuff over in Virginia. And anyway, I went in to get some leave stuff taken care of or whatever. And let's just say that our communication that day was probably not going to land on the healthiest for your podcast listeners. I think I took offense to a perceived attitude that she gave me. And I said something 1000% inappropriate that's regrettable and maybe a little laughable at this point in our marriage, but I basically told her not to get her panties in a bunch. Terrible.
Oh no.
It was literally the worst thing ever, and it's true. And I stormed off, and yeah.
And she married you.
I know. Two terribly young dysfunction. So this is the level of dysfunction you people are listening to. Okay. As a 19-year-old, and you know, later on, I'll let you tell the story as to why the heck you would talk to me again. But
well, I think I saw him later that night and I realized that I was a little rude. And so I apologized to him and took ownership. And then he apologized as well. And then I didn't really see him after that. And maybe a couple of weeks later, my roommate was like, is there somebody that you'd want to date around here? And I said, yeah, maybe this Marine Rankin. So we went on a double date and proceeded to have another date after that. And I think it was maybe our first or second date where he told me some really intimate things about his life. And I was sitting there going, okay, wow, I haven't experienced this before where somebody has shared this level of detail and information with me and was very vulnerable. And I was able to open up and share some things that had happened in my life. And so for me, that was like, wow, I met somebody that, even though I had this kind of crazy first impression where he made this rude comment to me, I'm having this date with someone I'm connecting with on a whole different level. And we were actually married 9 months after we started dating each other.
Wow, so a whirlwind romance.
Yeah, I do want to speak to Susan's comment regarding open, honest, vulnerable, talking about things that aren't necessarily, you know, the best look that most people want to put on, right, for first dates and things of that nature. But the vulnerability I believe that I was showing, while honest, I think it was more to basically end the relationship before it started, in a sense.
Oh, so you thought that it would have the opposite impact. Like Susan's experience was, this man is opening up with me and being vulnerable so I can be vulnerable back. But you thought that it was actually going to push her away?
I think subconsciously. I don't believe all of these things were me acting at a level of consciousness and really self-awareness. It's scary to risk actually getting to know someone, especially if you are attracted to them and you like them and all of these things. And, you know, I guess I already had a narrative that maybe some of our listeners can relate to, that I was never going to be good enough and that I wasn't in the league of this person. And so let's just kind of get it over with before it starts going somewhere and I'm further hurt, disappointed, and all of these things. And again, I don't believe that I necessarily had connected all of these dots. I think these are nuggets that I take away in hindsight, but it was the way that I just moved through, you know, life based upon where I came from, how I was raised, and all the things that form us, right? I've heard it said, and I'm no therapist or psychologist, though I've gone to a lot of both of them, and I feel like I have an honorary degree.
I think a lot of our listeners will be able to relate to
that. Yeah, some of you guys should be getting paid for what you've learned, for sure. And maybe you will. I'm going to plant a seed there someday. But one of my docs was telling me that you're in essence given your personality before you have an opportunity to have any real agency in it, right? Your caregivers, the people that raise you and all these things essentially kind of give you your hard drive formatting. And that's how you're going to navigate life absent some serious internal work. And hopefully you had good hardwiring, you know, but for a lot of us, we did not. And I had significant childhood trauma and then just complex, you know, trauma added on continually throughout life. And so for me, that looked like being kidnapped at age 3 by my father, who was supposed to have a visitation and had this elaborate scheme that he'd planned for a long time to, in essence, take me from my mother. But the reality of what, you know, happened was a profound level, ironically, of betrayal. Because what I would then endure was a change of my name, fake birth certificate, a whole identity shift, and a different hardwiring, I guess, if you will, put into me from this person who was very unhealthy at age 3 and a half. And I lived like that in secrecy, in essence, lies.
This is such an interesting parallel to your story of betrayal, which we haven't yet heard about, but I'm just thinking about, you know, deceptive sexuality, keeping secrets, right? Living in the basement, doing whatever you can to hide and protect the secret. And so you were really introduced to that at a very young age, and just interesting to see how that same dynamic played out in your adult life.
Yeah. And we're not talking about being in this life for 6 days or 6 weeks or even 6 months. I was gone for 6 years. So, you know, the context of my, I guess, formation in life was, who am I even? Everything I have been told about myself is untrue. It's all a lie, even down to the day where I'm born and what my name is. And every piece of me is, or at least certainly feels like, it's fake. It's not true. And I have this massive level of hurt and betrayal. And again, it wasn't like he was super healthy, me living there either, right? There was all kinds of other abuse and neglect and unhealthy sexuality and all of these things that were happening parallel in this time frame. And I was later found.
I am feeling so much emotion as I'm listening to this story. I knew a tiny piece of this that you've shared with me in the past, but not very much. I imagine that the listeners are also feeling engaged and wanting to know what happened. So yeah, if you're able to maybe just sort of give a little summary of what happened so that we have some idea.
Yeah, the Cliff Notes version is, I was found age 9 and basically went to go live with my mother, who I had no knowledge of, was trained to believe she was dead. And so now I lived in this new reality. But here's the thing. I carried with me, and I think this is an important piece, I learned lessons. The lessons were, trust no one, ever. Rely on yourself always. People will hurt you. Like, here's the narratives, right? And there may be some people who have perhaps not had my story, yet they can also relate to whatever happened in their lives, right? And relating it to betrayal, to, you know, now, is there is hurt and pain that comes with that. Certainly this betrayal I'm talking about is not the context of a relationship as far as a husband and a wife, or, you know, what the primary relationship is. However, for my story, it's relevant because it is a significant betrayal from a caregiver. And ironically, I would later repeat that. And here's one of the little recovery nuggets that I'm going to drop right here, because I love them, is, you know, pain that's not transformed will be transmitted. And I never did any of the work required to transform my pain. What I did with it is I tried to pretend like it wasn't a big deal. Yeah, no big deal. Everybody's got a story. Up until when I started this recovery stuff 7 years ago, the amount of people that knew that story were on one hand.
Yeah. So actually, let's sort of circle back a little bit to that. You told us how you met and that you got married within 9 months of meeting. And then you shared about your history, Scott, and sort of what you brought into your relationship, right? Because we bring our history to our present. So what was your marriage like at that time? And how long was it from the time you got married until there was a discovery?
Yeah, well, we both got out of the Marine Corps and moved across the country to Washington State. And we started attending church there. And I guess that was, what, 4 years after we were married is when Scott confessed to me that he had 2 one-night stands our first year of marriage when he was on deployment. And at that time, you know, I basically told him that I had a small transgression, and we instantly forgave each other. And at that time, we were new believers, and I thought, okay, you're supposed to forgive and forget. And so I never processed any of that. It was like, here's a blind side. I'm supposed to just forget about it. And whenever it came up, I just kind of dismissed it. And so I never really dealt with any of that trauma. And, you know, we seemed very happy. I just put up a boundary, don't ever let this happen again. This was in 1999. And so fast forward to 2017. And about this time, things were just starting to be really stressful in our relationship. Like, really, it was one minute we were okay, and then the next minute we weren't. And so I was really starting to ask questions like, what's going on with you? Will you please talk to me? And Scott just wouldn't talk to me. And so I knew something was really wrong. And so I had reached out to our former pastor and said, "Pastor, like something is seriously going on with Scott. You know, would you be willing to sit down with us? Because I can't get him to talk to me and I don't know what else to do at this point." And so he said, "Yes, I would be willing to." And he said, "I just want you to brace yourself because it sounds like there's really something terribly wrong going on with Scott." And I took that information and I thought, okay, yes, I know there is something terribly wrong, but I didn't think it was that bad. And so we proceeded to meet with him and Scott reluctantly started coming forth with some information, but I knew there was more. And obviously our pastor, he had no experience in this. And he just said, you know, go home and confess everything to Susan. And so basically I remember sitting on our bed going, okay, tell me everything. And he's like, well, what do you want to know? And I was like, everything in chronological order. And so he proceeded to tell me some things. And I was just sitting there, basically numb. I was in shock, just trying to process this high level of information that I received and just didn't know what to do at that point. And so I really felt early on in those first few days that we really needed to separate because I needed to have space from him to figure out what was happening. And then I also, he was still saying things to me that were really off. Like he wanted to go find himself and find his happiness. And so I was pretty certain that there were some other things going on. And so I just point blank asked him some questions one night. And so more information came out. I told him I wanted a separation, that I needed some time to think. And I told him I wanted it to be at least 2 weeks, but I wanted him to leave me a document telling me who knew what. And I obviously didn't know what I was asking for. So this is one of those, do not do this at home. This causes a tremendous amount of trauma. And he left me a document. And when I read that document, I was like, I have no clue who this person is that I'm married to. And a lot of partners describe that their world just shattered. And truly, I mean, the ground underneath me just crumbled and I was a mess. And so even talking about it now, I'm finding myself just kind of reliving that moment. And that was 7 years ago. And we've done a lot of healing. But I mean, that was probably one of the worst times I've ever had in my life, was just this reality that I thought that I had was not anything what it looked like. And I know a lot of people listening can relate to that because almost every single one of my clients tell me the same thing. And so at that point, I was done. I told him that the separation is for good. I'm filing for divorce. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And really, it took me some time to really figure out what to do. But I knew I needed some therapy and some help. And I knew that whether I was staying in this relationship or going forward on my own, that I needed to heal.
And you haven't mentioned this, but did the two of you have children at the time? And did that come into play in terms of making decisions about how you wanted to move forward or not move forward?
Yeah, we had a son who was in college at that time. And then our daughter was 12 when discovery happened. I still had her at home and our son was going to college out of state. And so he wasn't really affected so much by it, but she was, because she was still living at home. And so it was really hard to try to navigate. I would really fall apart in my bedroom or on the way home from work. But then when I'd walk in the door and she was at home, I'd put myself together, make dinner, put on a good face, and then I would basically isolate and then just fall apart. I remember somehow I could muster up this resiliency to go to work, to do all the things, because I knew I needed to do that for her, because I didn't know if we were going to be on our own moving forward. I had no clue what was going on with my husband.
Sounds like a very scary place to be. And I hear versions of what you're talking about, Susan, all the time from betrayed partners that I work with. And what's interesting is at the couples workshop that I facilitate, which I know you've sat in on, I think both of you have now sat in on that workshop. What we see is that oftentimes the betrayers, they say as they're listening to the other women in the workshop talk, like, oh my God, I've been hearing this from my wife for so long. How is it you guys don't know each other? Like, have you ever met before? You know, oh my God, everything I'm hearing is stuff that she's been saying. And so, I mean, your story, while obviously very unique in certain ways, is also very universal. You know, I have heard people say my life was shattered in that one instant, everything that I believed to be true was not true. And that in itself is an existential crisis. You know, you experienced in that moment truly existential trauma. And that's on the level of losing a parent, right? Like it changes your existential identity of there's always going to be this person there who loves me and takes care of me and was the person that brought me into the world. And when we have a break in that like attachment relationship, that's acute trauma. So I am certain that a lot of people listening are going to relate to this, not just the ones who have experienced that, but also the ones who have caused it, right?
For sure. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. If I could, Marnie, speak a little bit as to what was going on for me during this particular time, a lot of faulty thinking, you know, that has been building on itself for a long time. Not getting into all the details, but you're talking about, for me, behavior lacking integrity and infidelity for, at the time of discovery, 12 years.
So your whole relationship with Susan?
I mean, not the whole relationship. There was a period of time, you know, after we had done the cover up, really, because there was no really forgiving. And this was one of those bypass things. Hey, we're good. Let's move on.
That was first time, you mean, when you came forward on your own.
And there was a time there that there wasn't any behavior in that way. And then it just, you know, progressed from viewing inappropriate things to, you know, just devolved from there to sex outside the marriage and affairs and all kinds of different things that just continued to build and progress. So for me, some of the catastrophic mindset that led to the prolonged was the thinking that I'd screwed up before, that I'd been given grace and been forgiven. So now anything I do moving forward that hits on that, it's over. It's a wrap. Like, you might as well take it to your grave. And I literally had that mindset that I would never speak of it, because why? I was trying to protect myself. It was the fear around losing all of those things because of making these terrible decisions. And then feeling like I'd been given my chance and there is no second chance. You're basically dying with this one. And the problem with that, when you live outside of your value system, when you live outside of integrity, it takes a massive amount of energy. And it is a burden. And it's a burden from my experience that builds on oneself. And as my behavior continued to digress, I began living more and more into a fantasy of, you know, what could it really be? Because I would sit here and deflect and point fingers at her in either my mind or even potentially outwardly over the disconnection that I felt in the relationship.
Scott, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just want to point out right here that this is the integrity abuse that I often talk about, right? It's not just the behavior. It's like what you just said. It's the blaming. Susan, here you're living this secret life, you know, and committing adultery, essentially, and yet building up resentments in your mind of things about her. Right? That's what we mean by integrity violations.
Yeah. And there were things that I genuinely felt, for instance, disconnect, right? Well, here's the reality. As we look at this thing objectively from the outside, of course I'm disconnected from her. Hello, look at the life you're living. Yet instead of being able to see it for what it is and take ownership for the reason that that disconnection is happening and then do something proactively about it, that was not an option. Because I wasn't going to be willing to address the actual issue that meant confronting the problem and owning it and being honest with my partner. That was a no-fly zone. That wasn't going to happen. So I was left with what?
Blaming her.
Blame her. You know, whatever it would take to, I guess, rationalize why this disconnection happened. And I found myself also, believe it or not, in an existential crisis internally, because truly what I wanted in my soul more than anything was to be fully known and fully loved. I really did.
Yeah. But you didn't believe that if you were fully known, that you would be fully loved. And Scott, you know, when you were talking, what came to me is, you know, I often use the metaphor of the secret sexual basement. And what I'm hearing is that you had a secret sexual basement and then you blamed, even if it was in your mind, you blamed Susan for the fact that you had the basement.
Yeah, you know, in certain ways, for sure. I certainly blamed her for what the basement caused, right? Whether I could pick apart behaviors that I didn't appreciate that I perceived as unhealthy or whatever, right? Pointing fingers across the street instead of looking in the mirror. It's a lot easier to do that. And so unfortunately, that was the dysfunction of how I showed up. And it's incredibly sad and very tragic and abusive. And I know that it's really hard to own that word, abusive. And yet it doesn't mean it's not true. And so that is something that, you know, when I first started doing some Dr. Manuel's work, right? You hear the word and a lot of people are like, oh my gosh,
you know, abusive. The abuse word, yeah.
Yeah. It really makes your ears perk up and like, mm-hmm. Wow, no. And then you really start to metabolize and digest it. And it's like, no, it really is.
Well, it's also about looking at the definition of abuse in a different way, right? If we only come from the place of thinking of abuse as somebody being thrown up against a wall, right? Or punched or something like that, then it makes sense that somebody would say, I wasn't abusive. Or even that the betrayed partner would say, that didn't happen to me. I wasn't abused. It's really when we look at abuse in a different way, you know, there's other ways to look at it, which is a lot of these sort of, I always say these chronic patterns of offensive or offending behaviors. And all addicts and betrayers use those. They have to because they need to be able to continue to keep their secret. Right. And so how do you do that? Well, by continuing to lie, to gaslight, to manipulate somebody's reality, all of those things. And I will say, not that it necessarily matters because it's happening anyway, but I have never actually met somebody who's betrayed their partner whose goal it was to psychologically hurt them. But their goal was to keep their secret. So I'm going to do whatever I need to do, but I don't want to hurt my wife. Right. And that's a big part of why it's so difficult to heal a relationship, because while that is true and your reality as the one who's betraying to the partner, you just shattered them. Partners typically don't even want to hear, I love you. It's like, what do you mean you love me? Look at how you treated me. You don't do this to someone you love. Don't even ever tell me that again. And yet I have worked with so many men who have cried to me. Like, my partner doesn't believe how much I love her, and all I care about is her and my family, and I've destroyed it, and despair. But then I've worked with the partners who are like, I cannot listen to that. I don't believe it's true. He would not have done this if he loved me. And I truly think that's one of the greatest barriers for couples trying to heal. And I see, Susan, you're nodding your head. It looks like an agreement. Do you want to share anything here or respond?
Yeah, what comes up for me is I have several clients, several partners who right now are grappling with what you're talking about. Like, how can he love me? This isn't love. And what I like to coach on is really coming to an acceptance of, yeah, these things happen. And it's hard to understand how the addictive brain works, or someone who is in this destructive behavior. Like, you're never going to be able to understand it unless you are part of that destructive behavior. And so it's really coming to an understanding of what this is, like how it affects me. And then, not that I'm okay with it, but coming to an acceptance of, yes, this did happen, but this isn't happening now. And really bringing myself back to the present and really trying to help my clients come back to the present, as long as their spouses are doing the work and that there are boundaries and safety in place.
Well, yeah, that's where I want to go to what happened, because you'd said that you had decided it's over, I'm done, the separation is going to be permanent. You guys ended up staying together, right? So what happened for you?
Yeah, we were separated for about 4 months, and our son had come home for Thanksgiving, and Scott was very upset in front of our children. And so I wanted to meet with him after this to say, hey, you need to get your stuff together, like in front of our kids, like this isn't okay. And so we had a conversation, and that conversation was about 4 hours long. And he was sharing his heart with me, and I was seeing some of the changes that he was doing, because I knew he was going to therapy. He was going to a CSAT. He was going to the CSATs group. Like, I knew that he was doing things. And I think in my mind, I really had this wall up, because I didn't want to like even give this person a chance, because I didn't know who they were. And I was terrified to even go there. And so in my mind, I really spent time working on me, getting the help that I needed. And then during this conversation, I could really see that he was doing the work, but we kept circling back to, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to get over this. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to get past this. But I know that when you get to a healthy place, you're probably going to make somebody else happy. And it was at the end of that conversation, and Scott said, okay, if you need this divorce in order to heal, then I will do all the work. I will file, I'll take care of everything. I will do all of it if this is what you need. And it was like in that moment, I really feel like it was from God telling me, like, no, this isn't what you want. And so I remember just this feeling that overcame me, and I couldn't even get the words out, Marnie. I said something like, I'm terrified to even say this right now, but I guess I'll try. I'm not going to guarantee that anything's going to happen, but I'll at least try. And so I remember going home that night, and I woke up in the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep. And I was like, okay, is this a sign from you, Lord, saying, no, don't do this? And I had a lot of anxiety. So I was really trying to meditate and just ground myself. And I ended up opening up a book that I was reading about a couple going through something similar. And there was a specific scripture in there, and it had the word terrified in there. And it said, don't be terrified or afraid of them, that the Lord your God is with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. And for me, knowing my faith, I took that as a sign, like, okay, this is from you saying, okay, I am doing the right thing, and just affirming that. And so for me, it was, okay, I just kept taking like steps forward. And what did that look like? And I knew that the first thing we needed to do was sit down and come up with boundaries. And so we wrote up boundaries. We met with his CSAT. We exchanged the boundaries. And I remember Scott really had an issue with some of the consequences. And I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit, because I think it's important, because I feel like other clients probably relate to the same thing.
Well, I think what I see most often is that many betrayers feel that consequences are actually punishment. I'm being punished, I'm being controlled. And so one of the things that I do when I'm working with somebody in that situation is I help to reframe it and say, listen, this is about safety. Your partner has found out, I'm giving an example, this likely doesn't apply to you, Scott, maybe it does, but you know, your partner found out that you were traveling for business a lot, and every time you went away for business, you were having an affair, or you were going to massage parlors, or whatever it is. So now in recovery, your partner doesn't feel safe with you just going out of town. So an appropriate boundary is, yeah, unless she's able to travel with you, that you for a period of time can't travel by yourself. And again, like a lot of people would be like, well, that's controlling me and that's punishing me. And it's like, no, you don't have to do that. But you're asking and hoping that your partner who you betrayed is going to stay and try to work. How can she do that if you don't take steps to actually help her feel safe based on what she learned about you, right? And so I did notice for my clients anyway, that when I really frame it that way, as this is a safety thing, this is not about punishment, that really helps.
Yeah, I have much to say about a lot of things at this point, but I'll speak directly to the boundaries. First of all, I will say that 4 months into the recovery is still incredibly early for me, for anyone really. And so I will call my level of recovery at that point an immature one. Not to say I wasn't doing all the things. I had began to understand what an addiction looks like, come to terms with it, was seeing a therapist in a CSAT, was going to groups, was attending Celebrate Recovery and also getting support through healthy levels that way, was abstaining from the inner circle of behaviors, you know, was doing the things that I needed to do to be safe, even though I wasn't with my wife and, quite frankly, may never have the opportunity to be again. I think that's an important point here, that I really talk a lot to folks in this scenario. I believe with all that I am, that being motivated at the end of the day to do all of this work simply to restore a marriage is not enough. I believe that it has to be so motivated intrinsically within me. At the end of the day, fundamentally, all of this is about the reclamation of my integrity as a human being. Because if it's tied to a marriage, and that's a great way to get started. Don't, I mean, if that's your motivation today, cool.
Yeah.
not throwing any shade at anyone. Like, great.
It's fine. If it can get you in the door and that's fine, but it can't. There. Yeah. You're not going to have what you're talking about, Scott. You're not going to have that reclamation and that healing and the relief from the bondage of all of that, you know, awful stuff when you're not doing it for yourself, right? When you're not internally motivated.
And what you'll end up doing is you'll tie everything to an outcome that's happening in the moment, right? If your wife, even if you're separated, gives you a side hug, all of a sudden everything's great in the world. Oh my gosh, we're riding that high. Or if she cusses you out, calls you all the terrible names in the book, all of a sudden it's time to catastrophize it and, you know, it's over. And so now let me go have entitlement to go do whatever.
And what you're describing is very much what we see in active addiction. And even for people when they get into sobriety, it's like that distorted thinking. It plays such a role, not just in keeping the addiction going, because in order to keep acting out, an addict does have to have all sorts of impaired thinking in order to keep doing it, like rationalizing, minimizing, justifying, all that stuff. But even in sobriety, we often see that stuff happening, right? The impaired thinking. And that is the integrity abuse that we were talking about before. That doesn't just go away when people get sober.
No, and that's why I love another recovery nugget here. I've heard it said that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. It's connection.
Mm-hmm, it is.
So it's not just abstaining from behavior. That's not the goal, right? The opposite of this addiction that we have been struggling with is connecting.
Connecting to yourself, yeah. Because you can't connect to another person, really, if you're not connecting to yourself. But which, by the way, you guys shared that basically by saying that, you know, Scott, you hadn't told Susan that something was wrong, but she knew it intrinsically. And that's when she went to the pastor and asked, can he come talk? Because you were acting on some level like you were connected. And it was so obvious that you weren't. And Susan was feeling it. And why was that? Because you weren't connected to you. You were living in total secrecy and living a life, like as you said before, where you felt like you weren't good enough. You were not, if someone knew who you were, like, you couldn't, you wanted to be seen, but if you're seen, you're not going to be loved. So what you're saying is so, so true. It's about being able to connect first to yourself before you're able to repair with your partner. But a quick caveat, as much as I'm saying you need to connect first with yourself before you can be in connection with another person, when it comes to betrayal, it doesn't necessarily work in that way. It's not linear. Like, you can't betray your partner and then your partner's world gets shattered. And then you say, and by the way, this happens, and this is one of the reasons it doesn't work, is then you say, listen, I got to go fix myself first. So I know that I ran you over with a Mack truck and you're laying on the side of the road bleeding out, but I really have my own problems and I have a lot of stuff I have to tend to. So you go tend to yourself, I'll tend to myself. And once I'm better and I'm healed, then I'll come back and I'll get you. And then we can pick ourselves up and we can heal our marriage and have a great life. It doesn't work that way. So it's actually really hard work because you have to do those things parallel to each other, right? You have to learn how to connect to yourself and how do I connect with my partner when truly I'm not fully connected with myself? That's a very difficult and challenging dynamic.
Yeah, it really is. And I know it looks different for everyone too, right? Like for us, I needed to feel the pain required of the separation, because that's what I needed to unravel all of the things and honestly be in a state of suffering, because that's what Scott needed to actually have the incentive to do the deep work in order to change. So I think even though we did everything wrong by the book, you know what I mean? We really did. Our disclosure, we didn't know anything about anything. Like, it was a hot mess. Here's the write the book on how not to do anything. We've done that. And by God's grace, even if you do it wrong, if our hearts were in the right place, I was doing the things required to establish safety. Now, whether or not my wife would ever see that, that was not something for me to control. You know, they say only God can heal. And always calls you to do your part. You got to do your part. And if you're trying to control another person's part, guess what? You're not doing your part. Do your part and you got to surrender the outcomes.
So Scott, what was your part? I think this is really important. I think people want to know, okay, what did you do?
Super important. Well, first thing I did was cut off communication because I was still actively in an affair. That's something that we haven't talked about. At the time, I went and met with a pastor. So I had the draw, if you will, of someone on the other side of the fence going, hey, it's over. Come on. Like, this is what you've been waiting for, blah, blah, blah. And so one, denying the flesh in that moment of pain was something that I did so as not to further create more trauma. And so I think at first I gave myself a chance by not making it worse. Okay. So stopping the behavior, finding a safe place where I could stay was a godsend to me. Having trusted people that were going to love on me and not judge me, and yet still, I don't want to say hold me accountable because honestly that's on me, but would give me a healthy environment, because there's a lot of people that got a lot of opinions and a lot of them may not be super healthy. So my circle got really small and getting in groups was incredibly important to me. And again, for a prideful, egotistical career police officer, Marine, to humble myself and get on his knees and sob because he destroyed everything was exactly the place I needed to be. So these are the things that I started to do from the jump to get to a place where now I'm journaling. I'm writing all the things I need to write. I am religiously going to my CSAT and his groups, and I'm reading books, Out of the Shadows. I'm doing Facing the Shadows. I'm doing all of these things, and I'm learning about myself, and I'm beginning to uncover a lot of things, and I'm doing the trauma eggs, and I'm doing all of this stuff. And had for years, I'm respecting my wife's boundaries. When she gives me a thing like, hey, look, we'll talk when I reach out to you. The communications at this point are ceased unless it has to do with our daughter. And you need to respect that. And I respect that. And I give her what she needs. And so those are the things I think gave me a chance. Okay. They didn't guarantee anything. And I think that's really important.
Right. Like, I think a lot of people are willing to do the work if they have some kind of a guarantee.
100%.
Yeah. And that doesn't work here, because how can somebody who's been betrayed give a guarantee, right? They can't predict what's going to happen. It's like, I need you to first show me. You have to show me, and then I could make a decision. And even so, I don't even know if I can ever make a decision that's going to be 100%. You know, I am curious. Susan, while Scott was doing all of that stuff, he was doing all of his work. What were you doing?
Well, I think I mentioned earlier, I started seeing a therapist. And I mean, discovery for us was early August of 2017. And I think by October, I really came out of denial and really accepted that this wasn't just an excuse, that there was an addiction. And that was just finding some more information that showed me like, yeah, this is something that isn't. And so I went to my therapist and said, hey, I think my husband struggles with this sex addiction. And so she told me to read Out of the Shadows. And I read that book and wow, I mean, it made a lot of sense to me. And a lot of the characteristics that someone who struggles with this behavior, you know, Scott meant a lot of those. And so for me, it was giving me knowledge about what he struggled with. And, you know, as hard as it was to read that, it actually helped me in a way to kind of understand how we got here. Not that it was an excuse of making those choices, but I could understand to a point and empathize with how we got here. And so for me, it was really coming out of denial, accepting that there was a real issue here for him, and then really getting involved in a group for myself and really doing some of the deep work for me and understanding that I was experiencing betrayal trauma and really kind of processing what had happened. And that's really what kind of set that foundation so that when, you know, 4 months after a separation where I was more regulated, he was more regulated and in a healthy place, we were able to say, okay, let's try to come back together and work on this. You know, I think there were some issues going on in our marriage before D-Day where I thought we really communicated well, but really when you walk through something like this, you take a step back and not only are you looking at what happened as far as betrayal, you're looking at your whole marriage in a different lens. And I was asking myself, how in the heck did I even get here? And so for me, it was realizing that I had lost myself in just uncovering, like, how did I get here? And I did some really deep work on myself. I was doing all of these different groups, and a friend of mine who was a therapist was like, how are you so far along in your recovery? And I was like, well, I'm doing this. And she's like, well, that makes sense, because you've really done a lot of deep dive into all of this. And so, you know, coming back together, I think the first thing I said was we did boundaries, and then, you know, stabilizing safety. We went to a intensive marriage weekend that dealt with infidelity, and we were able to get into a small group there. And that was really key for us, because it really helped me empathize with other betrayers and to see how much pain they were going through. And because I wasn't so closely connected to them, that I was able to empathize with them and see that. And so I really encourage my clients to get into groups, not only individually, but as a couple. And that's why I think our couples community is so wonderful, is to give those couples an opportunity to meet other people going through similar things, because I think it just brings so much more healing to the table.
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly why we started the couples community, because it's like, it's great that there's men's groups and it's great that there's women's groups. But this is a relational problem. We have to make this relational, right? The healing also has to be relational. So yeah, there's not enough places for couples to come together or support and support others and receive support from other recovering couples. So yeah, I'm so glad that you guys had that experience.
And just to follow up with that, Marnie, is that intensive weekend we went away for us, one, it was something that we talked about, was like, okay, we need help now. Yes, we decided we're going to try, and we need help now. So we went away to this thing, and man, it was so impactful. And here's the cool thing. We broke up into small groups where you had five couples, and we did a lot of the work in person where you're reading impact letters and doing all this stuff. And there is a sacred space for sure. And it's why our heart largely is certainly working with individuals, but couples for us is our greatest heart. Because we've seen the magic that happens in these rooms. We've gone back to that and have volunteered our time years after that to give back to the same couples retreat. And here's the point. Of those five couples that we had in Texas at this retreat, three of the couples, we still talk on conference calls to check in and support each other almost going on 7 years later.
That's one of the gifts of all of this. And I know that's hard for people to hear, particularly when you're in the early stages and it's, you know, nothing but despair and heartache, but that the relationships that are often formed as a result of this, you know, nobody would have wanted to meet in this way, like wouldn't have chosen that. But the reality is when you come together with other people who are suffering, you don't take the time to start talking about what do you do for a living? And, you know, tell me about your kids and all that kind of stuff. And where'd you go to college? It's more diving way deeper, kind of moving through that and really getting down to the vulnerable places. And those kind of relationships are the strongest relationships. Scott, going back to what you said earlier, when you actually let people see you.
Yeah.
They see you and they can love you for who you are, not for who you are trying to pretend to be.
Well, these people, I mean, they made a priority. Susan and I renewed our vows 2019, so a couple years afterwards. And that ceremony was very different than our first and a lot more meaningful. And one of these couples made it a priority to fly all the way up from Texas to be there for us. So when you're talking about the real depth of relationship, here's the weird paradox for me, for both of us, I think I can speak for us. Nobody would ever choose to be a part of this community. And I'm sad that you qualify to be here. And I'm really glad you are here. Because there are so many gifts that I have seen and experienced. Some real relationships would be one, for sure. And then, you know, you're talking about hope. I'd love to get to that one a second. As far as our relationship goes today, we've never been closer. And I'll let Susan speak to her perspective. But I know this, I am honest. And I am willing to be forthcoming and actually bring things forward that I never would have talked about before. Fears, concerns, temptations, take ownership for failings. You know, one of my struggles now is, yeah, I'm not doing any of the behaviors yet. The second order change is I struggle with, you know, anxiety and anger still, because that's still attached to the pleasure centers of the brain. And I still struggle in that particular area. And it frustrates me and it upsets me. It's like, man, this is the deep work I probably have to do for much longer afterwards. And I've been to inpatient treatment for PTSD and all of these different things. So for me, my journey is certainly not over. And all of these things are connected. And I have great hope in all of it because I'm not pretending like these things don't exist. And I have been given so much grace and so much love and forgiveness and kindness that whole narrative I told you that I built my whole fortress around, that narrative of protect yourself at all costs, that narrative that if people see you completely, they'll never choose you. They'll never love you. Okay. That was so deeply ingrained in who I was as a person. And this beautiful, amazing woman sitting next to me completely destroyed it. Completely blew that whole negative philosophy right off the planet.
You're a lucky man.
Absolutely. I am.
You're a lucky man. Yeah. Because she saw you and sees you as something separate from the addiction. She sees who you are. She sees your soul. What you did, the behavior hurt her tremendously, right? But she stuck around. And it's incredible to hear you say that you've never been closer. I'd love to ask you, Susan, to share sort of your thoughts around how the relationship healed and where you are now. How do you feel about your marriage today?
Yeah, that's a great question. And about 10 months after discovery, we were at the beach celebrating Scott's birthday, kind of reclaiming that date. And we walked on the beach and I just remember this conversation we had and I started crying because I realized that if I wouldn't have given this a chance, that I would have missed this. And I mean, things are completely different than before. I mean, we're the same people, but we're also completely different. One of the first things that we did when we reconciled, you know, we obviously went to therapy and learning like Phanos. Phanos was something we did every day. And so before D-Day, I thought we communicated well. No, we weren't on any kind of connecting level just because Scott's secrets and everything that happened. And so that to me was very key in us sharing our feelings and where we were at and connecting on a different level. And we turned that and morphed that into something of our own. And so today we don't necessarily do a daily check-in, but we do check-in with each other every day in our own way because we've created this safe environment where he knows that he can come to me and say, hey, can I talk to you about this or share? And we just do that organically every day. And so that's just one example of how we have evolved after this process. And I just wanted to say that there is nothing special about Scott and I. There is no secret formula to be able to get through this. And part of why I wanted to coach other people is because I know that if I could get through this, if we could get through this, that we could help other people along the way. And if they can get to us early enough where we can avoid some of the pitfalls that we did, like this trickle disclosure, you know, doing something that we had no clue what we were doing, if we can avoid causing more harm, then it's something that I will forever be grateful for. If I could just help one other person through this. And I think part of telling our story like today in helping clients that we see at HCH, it's really in a way even healing us even more.
Well, that's the foundation of a 12-step program, right? Carrying the message to those who still suffer. And I think that that's so beautiful because you guys could, your choice could be, we went through hell. This was 7 years. Oh my God. We're done. Like, let's move on. We don't want to think about it anymore. We don't need to help everybody else. We just want to enjoy our life. And many people do this after they've experienced trauma. It's like, I need to make meaning out of this. Viktor Frankl wrote one of my favorite books. I read it in grad school called Man's Search for Meaning. He was in the Holocaust and everyone he lost was killed. It was just horror, you know, obviously a horror. And he was like, how could there be meaning in all of this? How is it possible? And what he discovered was that meaning is found through suffering. And that really made a lot of sense. When I read that, actually, I had just lost my mother after a very, very horrible 5-year battle with cancer. And I was not in a good place. And that book had a huge impact on me. because I realized I knew I was suffering. I was very clear that I was suffering. And it gave me hope because I was like, okay, the suffering has to happen because that's where I'm going to find the meaning in my life. And that has been my experience. And it sounds like you're having a similar one. And you, I know that you're helping a lot of people because at least to you, Susan, you've been with us for a few years and you have maintained a pretty active caseload. And, you know, you've been running one of our men's groups for a couple of years now. How long have you been doing the Monday night group?
Since October of 2021.
Oh my God, we're coming up on 3 years. Wow. So yeah, and that group has been, for the most part, pretty full. So when you said that you'll be happy to have helped one person, I just want to say, you know, yeah, that's great, but you have helped a whole lot more. And Scott, I'm thrilled that you have joined us and that you are going to be sharing your wisdom and much more than wisdom. You know, you both are living proof and living examples of what's possible. And I love hearing you say that you've never been closer because it's not just that, yeah, you healed what happened and you're moving on. You guys are surviving. It's really that you're thriving. I always hesitate to say that because it sounds so cheesy and cliche, but that's genuinely what I see. That is what I see with you. And that's what I see with most couples that I see heal and really get to the other side, especially for the betrayed partner. It's like, I won't go back to the way it was before. The things that I put up with and the things that I tolerated before, I would never tolerate now. So either it's going to be so much better and we're going to be so much closer. You know, we're going to do these organic check-ins, not because we have a piece of paper that we're holding and following that, but because we need to connect with each other. Like that's part of our life. That's what we do now. That's what I see. So there is a lot of hope, and it's not just hope for getting through each day and not being in pain, right? And just surviving. It could be so much more. And I really see that in the two of you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, what comes to mind for me, Marnie, is, and this may have taken quite a while for me to get to, but I think it's one key tool that I try my best to tap into, and it's come a bit more organically. It's the art of the reframe. You know, how I see things can dictate my attitude and how I act and respond to it. And just talking to someone here recently, and they were talking about how they were frustrated because it seemed like every time there was a positive thing, they're just waiting for the other shoe to drop and something negative happens. And so it's like this thing where like, I can never just appreciate the good thing because I am on high alert, hypervigilant for something bad to happen thereafter. And it's interesting because I was like, okay, what if we flip that one a little bit? Because what I have come to understand is, yes, my highs and lows have almost always been tied together in this journey. The difficult conversations that are unwanted, the texts that you receive from, you know, an acting out partner completely unsolicited years after, and you're like, oh crap, what do I do with this? Well, you know what to do with it. You be open, honest, vulnerable, and you bring it to the table and you're transparent and you're forthcoming. And that's the right thing to do. That's the integrity thing to do. And it probably is going to suck because it's going to trigger someone. How could it not? And there's going to be a difficult conversation and there's going to be emotions and all of the things. Here's the cool thing though. If you understand the path of integrity, you understand what you're actually doing, even though it feels really scary and feels uncomfortable as you're building trust. So what I've learned is that with the thing that I feel is the low, I can't think of a single time it didn't turn into a high because of the growth, because of the learning, because of the way that we learn to navigate it. And again, I'm not a super positive person by nature. Like my default setting is negativism. Like this is not, Scott is not exactly your model, you know, recovery person. Like I have to really intentionally do a lot of these things because my hard wiring, as you could dictate from my past, is probably not the highest upgrade you could find for the era. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that you can flip the script, that you can look for the silver lining in the cloud, that you can understand that nothing grows without resistance.
Yeah, it's a great message to end on. There's probably people here who are experiencing some of the same things you guys are talking about. And so it's validating they're on the right path and they're moving forward. There's probably people listening also who are incredibly sad and distraught because they are hearing, Scott, you talk about all the things that you did and your level of willingness and going to any lengths. And unfortunately, they're not seeing that in their own relationship. And so I just want to honor everybody in terms of where they're at and offer, again, no matter where you are in this journey, in this process, offer you a lot of compassion and grace. This is a journey not for the faint of heart. And as we are wrapping up, I wanted to ask each of you if you could say one thing or leave our listeners with one thing that you would want them to walk away with, what would that be?
Just take an honest evaluation of yourself. I really, truly believe that I am where I am today because I was able to really get the help that I needed and really look at myself and go, you know what? I'm worth it. I am worth healing. I'm worth thriving. And whether I do that with or without my partner, you know, I'm going to do it. And so, you know, I'm here today with that perseverance. Perseverance was my like word for years after discovery, is really persevering through this. And I know that I'm worth it. And so really just, you know, looking at yourself, and you are worth it.
Yeah, you are. I love hearing you say that. I love it. I hope that others listening can embody that same feeling of worthiness. That's just so beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And what about you, Scott? What would your last words be to, not last words, what would your, you know, what would you, you're never going to have last words.
Yeah. Not, I hope not.
No,
yeah, but you know, there are no last words.
For now.
Yeah. Honestly, something that's just in my heart to share, and I know everyone probably listening won't resonate with a biblical reference, but I want to throw it out there anyway, and just kind of take something from the story, if you will. Speaking to the betrayer, Jesus picked his disciples and they were all jacked up. In fact, there was more than one of them that betrayed him, right? Judas gets the rap, doesn't he? For, you know, selling Jesus out for some money and betraying him. You know, that's the one we kind of look at, but Peter did too. Peter, the apostle, also betrayed Jesus by denying him three times. What's my point? My point is you have two people that betrayed Jesus, and no betrayal was more significant than the other. They were both betrayal. So no need to compare the severity of the betrayal there. They both were the same. How these two men chose to move forward would dictate the rest of their lives. Judas died hanging from a tree in a pit of his own despair. He killed himself because he was in such despair that he couldn't move forward. And that's what he did. Peter had to go through a season and, you know, I guess repent from his, you know, betrayal and do all the things. And he would later preach on the day of Pentecost and bring all these people to know Christ, and it would be a cornerstone of the church. They both betrayed him. My point for you is, what are you going to do? Yes, you're just like them and me. Are you going to be Judas or are you going to be Peter? I love how, I think it was, I don't know if it's Stan or who, but they talk about being both the villain and the hero in the story.
That's Stan Tatkin. Okay.
I love that. Mm-hmm. It's why my doctor calls this hero's work.
Yep.
It really is. And I know some betrayed partners are not going to like to hear that. Mm-hmm. So I hear you, but you're the villain and the hero. Like you have both responsibilities.
Well, you can be the hero.
That's the thing.
You are the villain. And that's how a lot of times, unfortunately, there's so much shame.
Yeah.
That the betrayers are just holding on to that role or that label, I am the villain. And that's where we come in and we say, well, wait, hold on. Yeah, you've been that, but you have the opportunity.
Yes.
Hero. Take that opportunity. Those opportunities are there. You know, you guys, I see more often than I care to admit situations where I really believe that relationships can heal. And I see that one person is literally sabotaging the healing process just by not taking opportunities, consistently missing opportunities for healing. Because listen, you said it before, Scott, it's not easy work. It's going to be hard. No one's going to do it perfectly. There'll be ruptures, hopefully smaller, you know, there'll be triggers. Hopefully over time, they'll decrease in frequency and decrease in intensity, but it's going to happen. But this process, there's going to be resistance and there's going to be challenges, but it's only through that that you can actually get to the healing. And I think some people don't get there because there is, for whatever reason, an inability or a lack of willingness or a fear or whatever it is that keeps people from being willing to even see, not just take, but to see these experiences as opportunities for healing. So I would leave people with saying, really keep your eyes open and look all the time. Look every day for opportunities to show your partner, I'm talking to the betrayers right now, to show your partner that your goal, your number one priority is to help her feel safe. Or if you are a woman who has betrayed, to help your husband or whoever it is, whatever, you know, gender we're talking about, the idea is that if you've betrayed, that your goal is to every day look for opportunities to help your partner heal from the pain that you've caused. And you don't want to do it one day and then think, okay, I did it, or do 30 days and think, okay, I've done enough. No, it's going to be a constant effort and it's going to be something that hopefully you'll do forever, right? And if you do that, you have a much better chance of succeeding.
Thank you for sharing all that, Marnie. I just wanted to speak to the betrayed spouse for a minute because I feel like oftentimes the narrative that happens there is feeling stupid that someone, you know, did this to you. And I guess maybe in some ways, like taking ownership or beating oneself up about things that aren't your responsibility to, you know what I mean? You're not stupid. You're not messed up because someone else betrayed you, because someone else violated your trust. And so I just want to encourage you, like, you're not unworthy or any of those things just because someone else chose to hurt you and violate your trust and betray you.
Thank you, Scott. I really want to say thank you to both of you. I imagine that sharing the most intimate parts of your life in such a public way could be both exciting because, like you said, your mission is really to help other people, and also maybe a little scary. And you might potentially have a vulnerability hangover tomorrow. But I hope that you know that you are helping a lot of people, and I think giving hope and inspiration to a lot of people. So on behalf of all of our listeners and certainly of myself, thank you for being here today. And thanks for being a part of Helping Couples Heal. I love having you both there. And anybody looking for help and support, you can find both Susan and Scott by visiting our website at helpingcouplesheal.com. All right. Have a wonderful day. Thanks again to both of you.
Thanks, Marnie. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Helping Couples Heal podcast, where your healing is our number one priority. If you'd like additional resources about betrayal trauma or to learn more about our coaching services, please visit helpingcouplesheal.com or call 562-379-4325. Our help is available worldwide. Please support Helping Couples Heal in continuing to reach others impacted by betrayal trauma by leaving a review on iTunes and sharing this podcast with someone you care about. For additional support, follow us on Instagram and consider joining our Helping Couples Heal private Facebook community. This isn't an easy journey, but you don't have to do it alone. Once again, thank you for listening.